It's time for the Nick Turturro I Breathe Baseball Podcast. Good luck and Godspeed.
Enthusiasms. What a mind. What draws my admiration? What is that which gives me joy? Baseball. A man stands alone at the plate. This is a time for what? Individual achievement. There he stands alone, but in the field, what? Part of a team. Part of one big team. Bats, throws, catches. Lives himself a long day, Babe Ruth, to Ty Cobb, and so on. If he don't field, what is he? No one. Sunny day, the stands are full of fans. What does he have to say? I'm going out there for myself. But I get nowhere unless the team wins. That's right. And these days, my team ain't winning. It's the Yankees. So that's another story. Welcome to the show. I Breathe Baseball. My very special guest, Allison Futter from the Houston Astros. Welcome, Allison.
Ah, thank you for having me, Nick. It's good to be here. Wow, that was quite a speech. I feel inspired.
That's what I do. I try to get myself going. You know, you probably know what movie that's from, right?
I'm not sure what movie they're from. Pride of the Yankees?
No. It's actually about Al Capone. Al Capone gives the speech with a baseball bat. It's written by David Mamet, and Robert De Niro performed it in The Untouchables.
The Untouchables, okay.
Yeah.
It's all coming back.
I know. I know. It's a good speech, you know. I mean, it's written so well. I try to do justice to it. I do a decent job. Sometimes I speed it up just because, you know, I don't want to make the monologue too long-winded. Otherwise, people say, well, what is he doing? Is he doing an acting show or is he doing a baseball podcast? So, but most people get inspired. So I'm glad it got you going.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of baseball references that are used in all kinds of inspiring speeches. I mean, even in, like, just kind of normal talk and cliches and things that people say every day, there's, like, it'll be a baseball reference and we don't even realize it anymore because it's so common in our language.
Yeah, I know, that's right. That's true. I mean, there's a lot of things, like, you know, you quote from a baseball game. A lot of times things will come right out of your mouth and then you hear the announcer say it and you're like, it's funny because, you know, in baseball, it's a lot like life, you know? I mean, in life, you're always, you know, what are you doing? You're trying to get the first base, right? Or even like with a woman, you try to get the first. I shouldn't make that reference. But I'm just saying, try to get the first base.
I wasn't going to go there.
You know? Yeah, I don't want to go there. It's a family show. But, you know, you go to second, then you're trying to get the second. Then, you know, you get the third, and then the biggest thing is, you know, you want to do what? You want to come home. And in the end of the day, it's like you always want to go home. Like, it's always better to be at home. So it's funny, but baseball has a lot of – I mean, I'm not saying other sports don't, but I think maybe I'm prejudiced that way, that baseball is always, you know, is a game that kind of, you know, has more reference to life than other games for a lot of reasons, you know?
Absolutely. No, I think that's what people – I think everyone agrees on that because it's the least violent sport of all the major sports, and it does have a lot of familiarity with people, and it brings comfort to people in a lot of ways. And it's a good talking point for families, and so yeah, I think definitely. Well, George Carlin had that whole thing about why baseball is better than football, and even all the references are just so much less violent when you're talking about baseball than football. So I think there's something to that for sure.
Yeah, he was great. I remember that. In fact, when I was just talking about the bases, I'm like thinking to myself, where did I hear this? And now you said George Carlin, so kind of brought it back. So
exactly.
You're my face. I think this is my first female guest that I've been kind of doing this a little bit on and off for the last year or so. So it's good to, you know, talk to a woman, get a woman's perspective on baseball because, you know, women are much more involved in sports now. So it's like it's interesting. Like you think, okay, but I know you know your stuff. So Some some credibility. Sometimes you go, she's just a pretty face, but she knows the game. She knows the game. So
I know you're
a hardcore fan. And when did you first start liking baseball?
I grew up a baseball fan. I grew up in Dayton, Ohio, so I was a Reds fan, and we were very into the Reds. My dad was a huge Reds fan growing up because he grew up in that area also. And so he passed it along to my brother and I. And we went to a couple Reds games a year. It was a big deal for us because it was an hour drive down to Cincinnati. So there was a lot of planning involved when we were little. But you know, just created some great memories and then sort of branched off on my own and became a little bit of a Mets fan in the mid-'80s just because they were cool. And I loved Gary Carter because he was, you know, just a big personality. And I kind of got reeled in during the 86 World Series. And so I became a Mets fan for a while. Then went back to the Reds and then got hired by the Astros in 1997 and moved down here and been here ever since. And so, you know, a large part of my adult life has been surrounding the Houston Astros. So that's the very brief history. I never wanted to miss a postseason. After game six in 86, I decided I was never going to miss another postseason game because you just never knew what was going to happen. It was like the coolest thing I'd ever seen in my life at that point. And so except for maybe a couple games in college, you know, when you're sort of caught up in other things, I pretty much stuck to that and watched every playoff game for the next probably decade or so and saw some pretty good games.
From 86 on, you're saying?
Yeah, so I grew up like in the 70s and 80s just going to Reds games kind of as a casual fan. And then once the 86 World Series happened and I was watching that ball go through Bill Buckner's legs and just like all the craziness that ensued. And I thought, you know, I was an impressionable kid. And I thought, well, if this is happening now, what have I been missing and what's going to happen in the future? And like in 87 with the great World Series between the Twins and the Cardinals. And I watched every minute of that. And then in 88, when Kirk Gibson hit the home run off of Dennis Eckersley, I mean, you could go year by year and name like something unbelievable that happened in the World Series. And of course, in 90, I was a student at the University of Cincinnati when the Reds swept that World Series. Was just like, yeah, that was just amazing. I mean, when your team actually wins the thing, you can't even put into words like the euphoria.
Yeah, because you had some love for those Reds. So you know, then they won it in 1990. So that must have been beautiful for you to go back and see your team, your original team, win, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely. And that '90 team was so much fun with Eric Davis and Billy Hatcher and Paul O'Neill and Joe
O'Neill. Yeah.
And, I mean, it was Jose Rio. I mean, it was just a really fun team to root for, and they swept the A's. They weren't supposed to win any of those games, and
I know.
Yeah, it was a great series.
I know. I bet on the A's in '88, and they lost 4-1, almost got swept. And then my stupid friend Lou Coletta, he told me, but you got to bet the A's. They're a lock. They didn't win a game, not a game. So I'm like, you know what? I'm not meant to bet baseball. I should just stay far away from, you know, because I have too much emotion involved. I can tell you who's going to win, but once I put money on the game, I'm a jinx. So I'm like, you know, the one year I didn't bet the A's, they you know, that was the Earthquake World Series, 89. They actually swept that, but that was a weird World Series because there was a break and all that. But those other years, they just, you know, the Kirk Gibson, you knew like kind of that was it. That was the sign. And it's always like sometimes one thing can happen and a whole series could change. It's amazing. You know, you can pick out a moment in World Series where something happens. There's a moment that changes everything. And and when you're a hardcore fan, and you seem to be, because, you know, you remember all these details. And that was a fun team, the 90s. And the Nasty Boys, you had Paul O'Neill and Jose Rio, who was actually a Yankee, came up a Yankee. You had Lou Piniella. That was a wild team. They were... You know, like on paper, they weren't the best team. But you know, on paper doesn't mean squat when it comes down to winning championships, because it's always about, in the end, it's always about chemistry. You know, don't you agree? I mean, it really is.
It's about chemistry. It's about who's having the better week. It's about whose starting pitchers are not worn out. It's, you know, I mean, the bullpen plays so much into these World Series. I mean, you talk about '90. You could talk about the Royals last year. I mean, it's pretty consistent. But it's just, I think momentum has a lot to do with it. And yeah, I mean, chemistry, just the way that, not so much how much guys get along, but just how much their talent blends together. And as far as like putting together a lineup and being able to, you know, put together like a bullpen that works. And sometimes it's the guys that aren't supposed to be doing it. And, you know, with the Reds that year, it was like everybody wrote them off because the A's were a better team. I mean, there's no doubt that the A's had a better team, but who cares? You know, they weren't the better team the third week in October.
so they
got beat.
That's right.
But
I know.
That's all that matters.
I know.
You know?
Yeah, guys like Chris Sable with the goggles. Remember him?
Yeah. Oh, my
Chris
God. Well, so last year they had a 25th anniversary reunion, in Cincinnati of that team, and they had like a weekend celebration at the at Great American Ballpark. And of course, I found my way into covering that. And Chris Sabo,
lucky you,
exactly the same. Like, I wasn't prepared. Like, you know, 25 years is a really long time. So guys like that looked really good then, like look good now, but they look 25 years older. Chris Sabo has the same like flat top haircut. He hasn't gained or lost an ounce. Like, his face hasn't changed. He looks exactly like he did in 1990.
Yeah.
It was so weird. It was really cool to see all those guys, though.
Yeah, it's funny how some guys, man, you see them 15, 20 years later, and, you know, they get fat or they age or, you know, and then there are other guys that you go, this guy doesn't age. He's like Dorian Gray. He's just like Paul O'Neill. You see him in a booth. Paul O'Neill, like, this guy looks like, he looked in 96. He looks like the same dude.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
it's like, it's funny how some people age, man. Some people, it's scary. Like, if you ever go to a high school reunion and people have name tags and they come up to you and you go, that's you? Don't you remember me, Nick? And I'm like, well, people have seen me on TV, so obviously they know what I look like. But like, I'll look at people that I knew very well as a kid, and then I go, that's really you? I don't want to, you don't want to offend anybody, but it's like, my God, what happened?
That's the thing, and I tell people, because, you know, women and men, they do not age the same. So men lose their hair, they go gray, and they don't color their hair, like, they kind of get paunchy. Like, women kind of, if they stay the same size, they really don't age the same way. So you go to your 20th high school reunion, and that's where the big difference is, because if the men keep their hair, they don't look much different. Paul O'Neill has the same head of hair as he did 30 years ago. So he looks pretty much the same. But if you lose your hair and you kind of let yourself go, then, you know, it's all over.
with gray hair, it's kind of cool for a man to have gray hair. But, you know, with a woman, that's why they color their hair. They don't like gray hair. They don't like that salt and pepper. So, I mean, you know, if they go salt and pepper or gray, they think it's sophisticated. They think it's, you know, attractive, so
right.
Women
they get away with that. Women cannot.
I'll
be a redhead until the day I die. I will tell you that right now. Until the day I die, I will be a redhead, I promise you.
Oh, God bless you, because, you know, my mother was a redhead, so I love redheads. It's always, you know, something, to me, something fascinating about a redhead. They're just a little different. Everybody's different, but, you know, blondes, brunettes, brown. Yeah, I got dark hair, but something about a redhead, I mean, you know, I worked with David Caruso, and he was a crazy redhead, so... You know, I don't know what it is. It's just that red hair, like, you know, the freckles, the red hair, and, you know, it's just, you know, they stand out a little bit, you know. It's funny.
Yeah.
You know, I don't even remember too many red-headed ball players, but I guess there's a few if we were to think, but
there's a well, Rusty Staub.
Rusty Staub?
Redhead.
Red That's right.
Heath apparently was a redhead in his younger years, which is how he got his nickname. So
who was that?
Red Shandies.
Oh, red jeans. Wow.
Apparently he was a redhead. Well, Jerry Krasnick had an article a few years ago about why there aren't more red-haired ball players. He did this like whole study, Jerry Krasnick from ESPN, who is a redhead. He came up with some pretty interesting theories, and then he got totally just slammed by the public for writing like kind of a stupid article. I thought it was really interesting, but of course I'm a redhead, so maybe.
Well, you got to watch what you say today. You know, everything you say today gets, you know, if the political police are out to get you for everything. So now you're talking about a redhead. So now they offended somebody, I guess.
So, I was not offended. I thought it was very interesting.
Yeah, I wouldn't be offended. I mean, you got to have a sense of humor a little bit. I mean, that's kind of like what's missing a lot. I mean, you know, even like some of these telecasts and sports games. I mean, some of the baseball games. What's missing, I find, from some of the announcers is that sense of humor, is that sense of being a fan. And when I grew up, you know, I listened to Phil Rizzuto and I listened to all these guys that were great. Even if the team wasn't that great, they were still funny. They still made it feel like you were, you know, having a conversation at the ballpark. And I just feel like it's become so 24/7. It's become so corporate. It's almost too corporate. They need somebody in there. They need somebody, some freshness, you know what I mean, to make it feel like it's not just these ex-ball players. I'm not. It's just too much. I just think too much information. You know, they want to analyze every little thing, and just let's watch the game, enjoy the game, have a conversation, and let me feel something organic. You know,
right? Well, I like the storytelling And, the announcers who are more that have senses of humor, who understand how to maybe go off script a little bit. You know, when you have a blowout game or you have a team that's 37 games out of first place and it's August, do we really need to be, like, dissecting that, you know, fastball in the outside corner and exactly what that meant in that situation? Probably not. But mm-hmm. the ones who keep you engaged, keep you interested, you know, these players still mean something to the public, even if they stink as a team. And some there are some announcing teams that are fantastic. The Giants announcers, the San Francisco Giants, with Mike Kruko and Dwayne Piper, they're kind of the kings of that, where they're extremely entertaining. They're very informative. They're both former players,
uh-huh.
but they're also just
right.
hilarious, and they know how to mix that whole thing together. And I think that's
yeah.
important for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, they're, you're right. There's a couple of guys like that. I've heard them because I usually get them. MLB package, and those guys, they're good. They're not only
yes.
good with the game, but they're also, they got a little charisma, they got a little, you know, chutzpah going, they got
yeah,
a good thing,
funny.
Those guys. They're funny, and they're a little quirky, and you need that, you know? Yeah. I mean, the Yankees used to have that, and they kind of like, the Yankees have become this very corporate, now, they were always corporate, but they had fun, there was still some fun about the game, and now they've
yeah.
kind of become a little bland, a little too vanilla. Just like the ballpark they built, but that's that's my frustration. I'm not in love with that new stadium. I just feel it was the wrong move for a lot of reasons, you know, because Yankee Stadium like meant something, and where it was, even in the spot it was, and they moved
right.
it across the street. I don't know if you've been to that ballpark. Maybe
yeah,
you have.
I have.
I just feel it's cold. I don't know. It's just it doesn't. There's nothing really warm about it. The whole experience of, you know, it says Yankee Stadium. And it looks like Yankee Stadium, but somehow it doesn't feel like it. You know, I don't know if I could say it any better.
Yeah,
but
no,
I think
it's almost too nice. It's a beautiful palace.
Yeah,
of a
it is beautiful.
But it's not. It doesn't have like that warm feeling. I have some friends that live in New York who are Yankees fans, and when I was working for the Astros, when we were playing the Mets, they came to a Mets game. Because I left them tickets, and you know, diehard Yankees fans, and they said that they love the ballpark so much more than Yankee Stadium because it just was felt like a ballpark, and it
yeah.
was cozy. It has some intimacy to it. It's really pretty, but it just feels more like a baseball stadium than Yankee Stadium.
Oh, Citi Field, yeah, by far.
Yeah.
They did a better job, and I mean, you know, too bad. I'm not a Mets fan, but I mean, I like that ballpark. It's a fun park. It has a good vibe, and it feels,
yes.
I mean, and the Mets, you know, listen, the Mets, they had a dumpy stadium, and they really needed a stadium. They needed a stadium, and they did a nice
yes.
job with that. Now they got a good product on the team because they've built a good farm system and developed all these kids. But that ballpark, I mean, Yankees, they didn't need to do that. They could have, in my book, they could have, you know, refurbished what they had. They could have worked with it, kept it on the same ground. I think they wouldn't have lost that feeling. They went for this palace. They went for this, you know, bigger than larger than life thing. And I think they lost a lot. You know, they lost something. They lost some edge. It was
right.
a feeling that when you walked in that place, you just, you know, even the wind, everything. It's so big, and you're so far away from the field too. It's it's very frustrating. And then, you when you go to a game, it's beautiful, and you sit there and you go, but it's just not the same. It's not
right.
the same. You know. Even from the Grand Concourse, used to be able to look at it. I look at old pictures. I still, like, fantasize that the old stadium is still there. I can't get over it. Like, you know, they show that park across the street, and I'm like, what? You tore it down? How do you
yeah.
tear that down? How do you tear down a work of art? You know, like Fenway. They didn't tear Fenway down. You know?
Right.
I mean, so.
Yeah, I think it's also because of the history. There's no history in the new Yankee Stadium as far as the players. That made the Yankees, to have never played there, obviously.
Right.
We're dead now. But yeah,
right.
I mean, the first time we walked in there, we said, well, it looks like a stadium that they spent $2 billion on almost, you know. And it was like, there's nothing, it's a flawless place, for sure.
Yeah.
But it's
yeah.
also very expensive. I mean, as a fan from the outside, so I'm not in New York and I don't watch a lot of Yankees games, but when they show them on national TV and I'm watching, I mean, there's so many empty seats. In camera
yeah.
shots, because
I know.
People aren't in those seats. It's almost like, I don't know, it's very corporate, but
yeah.
it's not like somebody, you know, people that are normal people just making normal salaries could possibly afford anything besides the upper deck. That's what it seems. I could be wrong.
Exactly. It's a bad look. And I always said, you know what they should do? Like they do at the Oscars and these award shows, get seat fillers. Just put people in the seats because on TV it just looks bad. You know, if people are like, well, why are they complaining about? And since they opened, those box seats have always been like half empty. And it's like, you should just, in the old stadium, you never saw that. The box seats were always filled. And I'll tell you what they should have did. And, of course, they separated the rich from the poor because, you know, you can't get in there. It's like a private club. But you used to be able to walk around the stadium and try to sneak in and walk around and get bumped. But you had that traffic. You had that, you know, the fans going by you, getting in your way. And they lost that. You know, now you got to have a special wristband, armband. Yeah. It's like you're entering a freaking jail cell. It's the people are frustrated because you can't walk around. You can't get that camaraderie. So they just, I don't know. To me, it was a bad move, but it's over. What are you going to do? You know, I have the memories, and that's what I have. I have the memories, and I'm thankful for the memories, but it's not the same. I don't think it'll ever be the same, but I'm always going to be a Yankee fan, even if I'm mad at them or I'm angry, but that's my team. I'm not going to jump ship. But I don't like what's going on. You know, what are you going to do? But hey, let's get to the Houston Astros. So how did you wind up, you know, getting in the baseball world and becoming a correspondent and a writer? I'm just curious how that all happened.
Well, I'll try to give you the short version. I was working in college sports at University of Cincinnati, and I in their sports information department. So I was in charge of a lot of different sports like women's soccer and swimming and diving and track and field, but also baseball. And so I just sort of learned a lot about official scoring and doing media guides and all that stuff, and I really wanted to pursue a career in baseball if possible. So I went to the winter meetings many, many years ago, a couple decades ago, and they have a job fair that goes on every year, and I got a minor league job with the AA Cleveland Indians located in Canton, Ohio. And I worked for them for a year, and then I'm going to date myself, but this is like kind of pre-internet, or this is like when the internet was first coming about. And I had like the one computer at our company, and so I just like skimmed to see which teams. There were 28 major league teams at the time, and I wanted to see who had websites. So I was just like putting in like www.pittsburghpirates.com to see like what would come up.
Oh my God.
Yeah, 10 teams had websites of the 28.
Wow.
And I just put in Houston Astros, and it was like a one-page website, and it was so rudimentary. It was like embarrassing that they even had one. And in the middle of the page was this red button that said click here for job openings. And so I clicked on it, and it was for like a job I wasn't qualified for at all. I sent my resume in, and they called me like a week later, and they had a job in their PR department that was like right up my alley. And I came in and interviewed for it, and I got it. And I drove to Houston from Dayton, Ohio, with my mother, 19 hours.
Wow!
I've been here ever since.
Wow.
Yeah. So I started in media relations, and then when MLB.com came around in 2001, I went over there to become a beat writer. So I covered the Astros beat from 01 to 09. Then I became the Astros social media director in 2009 when social media started to explode. And then about 4 years ago, I came back to MLB.com. So now I just go all over the place and cover whatever they want me to cover. That's the abbreviated version.
Wow. Well, that's definitely a path, you know. But everybody's got a path. But it's a good path.
It's
a good path. So, I mean, but the Astros, I mean, they've been around. I mean, they've been around since the year I'm born, 1962, right? I mean, the Colts.
Yes, Colt 45, 1962.
That was a good look. That was a great look, that Colts uniform. And then they changed to what? Like 3 years later, they changed to the Astros or something?
Yeah, so they played in Colt Stadium, which was outside, which was a disaster. The temperatures are about 95 degrees in the summer, and the mosquitoes are about the size of birds.
Wow.
So, yeah, they needed an indoor stadium, and so they were the Colt 45s for 3 years, and then they got the dome, the Astrodome passed, basically, and they built it to open it in 1965. And it was, you know, the first dome stadium in the world. And it was something that people flew in all over from all over the world to see. And, and so from 65 until 1999, that was the Astros' home until they moved to their downtown ballpark, now known as Minute Maid Park.
Yeah, how is Minute Maid Park? Tell me, is it a good park?
Yeah, it's a great ballpark. It's got the retractable roof, which is nice, of course. So there are no rain delays here. And the left field, like the left field wall, is really it's really glass. So even when the roof is closed, you feel like you're outside because you can see outside.
Right.
And
it's
so
got a feeling like
a big
Safeco. Is it like Safeco? That kind of feel.
Safeco kind of has like a little. It's kind of got openings on the side, which the Minute Maid Park doesn't. But like if you go to Arizona, it's a very nice ballpark. But there are no like windows, and so when you close that roof, you know they say. The thing that you hear a lot is that it feels like an airplane hangar. And Minute Maid Park, it's like you look out and you see downtown Houston, and even when it's closed. And so it's very cozy. It seats 42,000. It's got a train that runs up and down on these tracks in left field. It's a fun ballpark. And they've had some good years there. And they won the pennant about 11 years ago. And it's been some exciting days. That place is so loud when the roof is closed. It's just really fun. When the place is packed and the team is good, then it's a really good place to watch baseball.
Yeah, you can't tell on TV. You know, unless you go to a stadium and you sit there in the stadium, then you go, wow, this place is loud. You really, TV doesn't capture a lot, you know, the fan noise or the intensity of a ballpark, unless you sit there with the fans and they have a good team and they have a good crowd, and then you could feel the energy of that crowd. I mean, I just find like TV doesn't capture. You don't know how loud a place could be, right? I mean, it's just like, you know, I have been in Fenway. I was in Fenway in 03 when Pedro and they had all those fights. I was at that game, and it was just like I thought I was going to have a heart attack. Like the noise level. The intensity, it was almost like you were in a death fight. You know, it was like, wow, this is insane. I don't know if I could take the intensity. I'm only watching.
Right.
I'm not even playing.
No, when you care that much, it's not fun. I mean, after a while, it's just when it's really intense and these games are so close, it's not. I remember in 90, I was there when they clinched the pennant in the LCS, the game six, whatever it was, and it was like this really close game, and I remember standing there thinking, feel like I'm about to have a heart attack and I'm 19 years old. And it was like, I'm not having fun anymore. This is way too stressful. It's way easier to actually play these games than it is to be the spectator watching them. I'm convinced of it.
Yeah, because when you're playing, when you're doing something, even when you're acting, when you're in it, when you're in the thick of it, you're not thinking about it. Then when you look at it or you think about it, it becomes a very, nerve-wracking experience because you're, like, emotionally invested, but you're only emotionally invested by watching it and thinking of it. You're not really doing it. Those guys are in it, so you're like, oh, my God, oh, ooh, ah. You know, you're like, but it's, and people watch you, and I get yelled at. People go, it's no fun to watch a game with, it's no fun to see you. And I'm like, because you don't understand what I got invested. And they're like, well, you're not playing. You're not playing, dummy. And I'm like, yeah, I know. Get away from me. Just get away because even when a team is not good, like this year, I got a bad team, but I'm still frustrated. But it's like, you know, you say, I'm not going to care. That's it. I'm done. I'm never coming back. And then, you know, the next day you're back at it again.
I know. I read your tweets, and I'm like, oh, my God, I feel the angst. You just have so much angst. You're so sad.
I know. I mean, I'm almost ridiculous. I almost am too passionate. I don't think there's too many people like me. It's almost like a guy who should have his own. I should have my own show on some level, like underground, because it's like it's for hard hardcore fans. It's not for like, you know, I'm not a very, you know, and I try to keep it, but I can't, you know, it's just so it comes out of me, and because I really really love the game. Ultimately, I have some credibility because I've watched it, I've studied it. I've coached Little League, so, you know, people get a kick at it. They go, yeah, your tweets are ridiculously funny or this or that. I go, well, I'm just saying what I feel, and I'm, you know, trying to control myself. You know, it's like I don't want to get too, you know, be too obscene. But you know, it's what makes the game fun. And I mean, you know, but the Astros, I mean, do they feel funny being in the American League? Because, you know, I always looked at them as a National League team. So now they're, you know, a good young team in the American League. How do you feel about that? Do you like them in the American League?
No, I don't like the American League. So I'm a Nationals girl, and that's just how it is. I'm not only a Nationals girl, but a Nationals Central girl. So I have very specific desires to be back in that division. But, it was very controversial when it first happened, when they first announced it was happening. The team was getting sold. They were moving to the American League. The Astros fans were furious, not only because they just don't like change, but because they were a terrible team trying to get worse before they were going to get better, and they were moving to a division that everyone looked at as one of the best in baseball. It turned out to not be that way. The American League West is actually not very good. But for the first couple of years, when they were – so 2013 was their first year in the American League, and they were purposely, you know, trying to end with the worst record to get the highest draft positioning. And so it was just like this, you know, perfect storm of fans being mad because the team was bad, fans being mad because the games weren't on TV. They were having these fights with the new regional sports network, and mad because they had to, you know, switch to the American League. And now, you know, what do we do now? We hate the Cardinals. Now we have to hate the Mariners. Like, it was so foreign to me. Like, okay, I have to, like,
no history.
Yell
no history
at the Angels. Yeah. You know, it just didn't make any sense. And so it's gotten, you know, the team is obviously better, and I think people have largely forgotten it. But there's people that are still upset about it, but it hasn't, like, affected, you know, attendance. I mean, you know, winning and losing is the only thing that affects attendance. And so I think people are a little more used to it now.
Now you guys got off to kind of a slow start this year. But they got so much talent. I could see them. They're slowly turning it around. I mean, they're slowly turning. What's going on? Come on, man. Good.
You all right?
Yeah. My thing dropped out. Are you there? Okay.
Oh,
sorry.
I'm here. Okay.
Yeah. Well, so what's happened there? I mean, has the pitching been a little bit off, or just guys having a bad year, or expectations too high, or what?
No, the pitching's been off. I mean, they came into season sort of not really doing any tweaking to the rotation. They added Doug Sister late in the off season, which was a good move, but it's not, it really shouldn't have been the only move. It was very obvious that they weren't doing anything to change the rotation even a little bit. So they had to count on Dallas Keuchel doing the exact same thing as he did last year when he won the Cy Young. Colin McHugh doing the exact same thing when he won 19 games. And, you know, things change from season to season, and you're going to have a guy that maybe, you know, takes a couple steps down or isn't quite as effective. And so it's really been the rotation issues right now. The bullpen, you know, they got a closer from Philly, Ken Giles, who ended up not – you know, he lost that closing job even before spring training was over. So they're trying to work him back in and get his confidence up. And they've made made some pretty stupid mistakes on the base paths defensively. So they're a better team than their record shows. They're not going to end up in last place. But the problem is they don't have, like, this great team where they're going to be able to just, you know, go and just, you know, win, play at a 650 clip and win the division. I mean, I think it's going to be very hard at this point for them to actually get to the playoffs, but they could still have, like, they're going to have a pretty good summer. They're going to win a lot of games at Minute Maid Park, but they dug themselves into such a hole that it's going to be really hard to get out of it. So.
Yeah. Well, that's what happens. You know, sometimes you have a successful year, and then people think automatically, Keuchel, all those other guys, Colin, McHugh, I mean, it's not a given. It's not a given, and that's why they still have a great young core, but you know, in the end, man, if you don't have good starting pitching, I don't care how good your bullpen. Look at the Yankees. I mean, they're a mess. But their starting pitching is a joke. And so, we got the big three. Who cares about the big three? You can't even get to the big three.
Exactly.
So, you know, it's just, there's so many things. You can't just stand still. You know, you have to look at it and say, yeah, we have a good core, but can we bank on this guy winning 19 games again? Can we bank on that guy? And not until he's done it for a couple of years, not until he really has a track record. And that's the problem. You know, you have 1 year of success, and you think, okay, it's a given. It's not always a given. And but I think if they get back to 500, who knows, you know, with that stupid, crazy second wild card, maybe they could find a way, you know, in. But, you know, they're a fun team to watch. But, you know, you can – I always see that coming with some teams that have a little success. Right away they think it's just going to happen again, and then it doesn't. But
well, and the Astros have also traded away a lot of pitching prospects to get better on the major league level at a quicker pace. They've traded like 10 pitching prospects in the last couple of years, and you know, not all those guys are going to pan out. But at the same time,
yeah.
I mean, that's a lot of it's just pitching is just such a you got to hold on to that.
Yeah, you do. You
it's
do.
It's hard to develop those guys, and you get you have like 5 good pitchers. I mean, I always use this as an example, but the Astros like 15 years ago had these 4 stud prospects in their system. And everyone was like, oh, my God, this team's going to be great for years to come. And only one, Roy Oswalt, really panned out. And the other three
He was
guys,
the only guy.
Yeah, he was the only one. And these were 4 can't-miss, no-doubters, 4 awesome pitchers. And, you know, one just, like, took a dive back into second base on a pickoff attempt and tore his shoulder up. And that was pretty much it for him. And, you know, these things happen. And so you have to have, like, so much pitching talent that you don't know what to do with. And all of a sudden, there's a place for all these guys. And that's what teams have to be very, very careful of.
Yeah. I mean, look at the Yankees. They haven't developed starting pitching since, like, Andy Pettit. I can't remember the last guy that was, you know, a really great starting pitching guy that they developed. Look at the Mets. I mean, the Mets have, you know, they had Harvey there, DeGrom, and then they found Syndergaard from, you know, I don't know if they grabbed him from somewhere, but then there's other kid, Mats. I mean, they have an abundance of pitching. And that's why, you know, that that's a solid, solid team. I mean, their hitting is good, not great, but with that pitching staff, man, you're gonna be relevant for a while, you know? I mean,
with the Yankees, I mean, Michael Pineda, we were just like talking about him on a simulcast the other day, but I mean, that's the kind of guy, you know, it's baffling and everyone's confused and he's got this terrible body language now and you know, why hasn't he developed into what he's supposed to be? And I don't know the answers to that. I do know that you should probably have – it's easier to sort of phase him out if you have, like, a plethora of pitchers coming up through your system. And you don't have to pin all of your hopes on this guy that has never been able to put it together for a long period of time. And that's the problem.
Yeah, he can't. He's got talent, but there's a difference between talent and being, you know – successful, whether he's a head case, whatever the deal is. The guy has 9,000 strikeouts, but then he has an inning where he gives up, you know, 7 runs or 5 runs, or you know, and he looks great in moments, but for whatever reason, his body language, his mind, you know, pitching is such a freaking mental. I mean, baseball is a mental game as it is, but pitching—that's why they say don't go near pitchers. They say pitchers are crazy to begin with.
Yeah.
So you know, the good ones. You know, you hear David Cone on and David Cone is smart. He was a good one, but he was bright. You know, he had that mental strength, David Cone. And you see these guys, they melt down, man. Even this guy Evaldi throws hard, but he's still like a thrower. You know, I'm not sold on any of these guys. I mean, like, you know, you watch CeCe, you know, he's a, you know, a shell of himself, but he knows how to pitch.
Yeah.
One thing about CeCe, you know that he could still go to war and he could still like grind it out because he knows what it takes to win. And that's the problem. They bring all these guys over here. They don't know how to win. Even like the Astros, they had a little taste of winning. But you need a guy there to say, let me show you the way. Or they learn how to win. You know, they learn.
Right.
Like, look at the Royals. The Royals, they became a real team. They're not the best team on paper, but they became such a good team that they learned how to win, man. And you could see they're kind of like, you know, a blue-collar team, but you know, they're fun to watch because they're a real team. And, you know, they don't have incredible pitching, but they've had a good enough pitching and a good enough bullpen. And, you know, it's funny. I was thinking about relief pitchers yesterday, some of these great relief pitchers that all failed as starters, like Wade Davis. He was a failed starter.
Right.
You know, even the great Mariano Rivera was a failed starter, you know?
Yeah, they don't get drafted as like you don't hear like on draft day. Well, we see him as like a 6th inning guy. You know, I mean, they're drafted mainly as starting pitchers, and then they sort of the chips fall where they may. But that's why I've always liked bullpens. I have an affinity for bullpen guys because they're pretty much former starters, we'll call them, and you cannot be successful without them. And they're the ones that you don't pay any attention to unless they blow a lead. They never get interviewed when they just get, you know, three outs and do their job. They're only reporters only want to talk to them when they blow it. And you will, your team will be an absolute disaster without them. So I like
them. Yeah, no, I like them. I wouldn't want to be a pitcher. It's too much pressure. I'd like to manage. I would like to manage maybe like one game. I think I'd be a better bench coach. I'd be a guy like, I'd be a good Don Zimmer. You know what I mean?
Right.
You know, they could have me as like the guy in there. That's kind of like my fantasy. It's one of my fantasies.
Bench coach, you have to see things three innings before the manager. You have to be prepared. Things before they happen. Can you do that?
Yeah, I could. I mean, I was a pretty good little league manager, except the parents used to get in my head.
Yeah.
You know, and they would be yelling through the stands, why are you doing that? And I'd be like, oh, stop. I'm trying to manage. Would you please? You know, oh, my God. You had to see some of my little league games. You would have died laughing. It was classic. You couldn't write it.
I can't imagine. Those parents need to.
Oh my God!
Yeah.
You know, I managed like in a very like privileged country club league, where you know the parents were like, oh my God, you know, they were so passive aggressive and condescending that it would get to you. You know, it would really sometimes get under your skin. But I would be like, you know, you people don't know what you're talking about. I'm just passionate. I'm not crazy. I'm just passionate. Get away from me. Walk away. You know?
Right.
So let's say your favorite three teams, the Reds, the Mets, the Astros. Who's your favorite Red? You have a favorite Red?
I had a favorite. Paul O'Neill was my favorite Red because I was a crush thing when I was a teenager.
Oh, you had a crush on Paulie.
Yeah.
Wow.
I kind of still do, but don't tell him. And
I won't.
And Eric Davis, Eric Davis was one of the greatest players I've ever seen. Had he had a full career, I cannot imagine what he could have been. Unfortunately, injuries probably shortened things a little bit, but that was as five pool of a player as I have ever seen with Eric Davis.
Yeah, he had all the goods, I know. He actually gave me a bat one time. He was on deck, he was with the Orioles, and I was talking to him, and I go, hey, you got any extra lumber? And he was on deck, and he came over and gave me a bat while he was working. I was like, wow, what a nice guy. Thanks, Eric. I didn't mean to bother you. I know you're on bat, you know, on deck. But
Nice. He's a really nice guy. He was a good representative of that team.
And then the Mets, of course, was Gary Carter, right?
Gary Carter, he was
that's your guy?
Mets.
Yeah, he was. It's too bad. He passed away. So that was very sad.
Young age.
I know. I have his jersey here, actually. You know, I buy these replicas. I have the 86. I have a lot of jerseys. I have Astro jerseys. I have Red jerseys. I showed you my old Astro cap. I have all kinds of stuff. I'm nutty with this baseball stuff. But, Gary Kid Carter, wow. He was a great Expo and a great Met.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know? Now, what about the Astros? Have you favorite Astro?
Well, no, I mean, the Astros were
but you don't,
professional life, and
it's not your history. Yeah.
I mean, I you know, there's guys that like Lance Berkman who just played there forever, and he's just a hilarious, funny guy who
I liked him.
So we were pretty good friends. Jeff Bagwell, he was around. It's the guys that like played there a long time. Brad Ausmus.
You know what Astro I liked as a kid? You know what I liked? Probably before your time, because I'm older than you. When I think of the Astros, you know what I think of? I think of Cesar Cedeño.
Yeah, that's another
I don't know,
player.
I just think of him because he was, you talk about Eric Davis, this guy, man. They thought he was going to be like the next Roberto Clemente. And I don't remember exactly what happened or why it didn't happen, but, man, he had enormous talent. I mean, the 70s, no one coming near the 70s for me. I mean, that's my era, and those teams back then, the big red machine, the A's, the Yankees, the 70s, was the era. That was the era, man. I'll tell you, I was too young in the 60s, but I love the 70s. There's something about the quality of the play and, you know?
Absolutely. No, he was awesome. He held a lot of records for the Astros for many, many years for stolen bases. And he still is a fan favorite around here, no doubt.
I'm sure he is. And the toy cannon, Jimmy Wynn. How about Jimmy Wynn?
He's still around a lot, too. He does a lot of things with the team and their community. And, the toy cannon. So he held the home run record until Jeff Bagwell came and broke it. And
I know my Houston Astros. I know my
absolutely.
Astros.
Absolutely. Very impressive. I'm very impressed.
All right, listen, I might be coming out there in June to this Comic Palooza to sign some pictures. So I'd love to come out to the stadium and see you and maybe throw a ball or something. I don't know, it's mid-June somewhere, so who knows? Maybe I'll let you know. It would be fun.
Yeah, absolutely. That would be great.
And
it would be nice to meet you in person.
Yeah. I'm fun. I'm a fun guy to watch a game with. Believe me, we'll have a lot of fun.
Okay,
and, you know,
good.
So thanks for doing this. It was great having you as a guest, and I hope you had fun.
I did. I enjoyed it. Thanks.
Yeah. It's hard through the phone. I can't see you. You can't see my eyes. I can't see your eyes, and you know, I wind up talking on top of people's words. I'm terrible anyway. I talk on top of people's words. Everybody says, "Well, can I speak? Can I speak?" I'm like, "Yeah, I'll let you speak. Go ahead."
No,
speak.
You're great.
You know?
I thought this was great.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
MLB.tv Premium, the number one live streaming sports service, is celebrating 13 years. Watch every out-of-market regular season game live or on demand in true HD. Real-time highlights, live look-ins, pitch tracking widget, and more. MLB.tv Premium includes a free At-Bat 15 subscription. Watch live baseball on over 400 mobile and connected devices. Watch at home, in the office, or on the go, every night on every device. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Visit MLB.tv for details.